This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, the Rainbow Report, on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, and I'm Doug Pollard back once again. Our topic tonight is community. What exactly is this thing we call the gay and lesbian community? Does it really exist? And if it does, then what does it want? Politicians say it's divided and doesn't know. This is the excuse for the rather weak stance on same-sex relationship recognition in the Labour Party's draft national platform, which says nothing about same-sex marriage and is somewhat weak on civil unions. Corey Earlham will be filling us in on that one, won't you, Corey?
Looking forward to it at the end of the show, Doug.
Yes. Well, we always enjoy your wit and wisdom, yeah? Good to have you back again. This issue has given rise, of course, to a lot of sniping online, activists taking different stances, divided over whether this is in fact an issue worth fighting over at all. It seems fairly obvious to me that society as a whole is divided over relationship recognition, with increasing numbers choosing not to marry, but no one suggests heterosexuals shouldn't be able to if they want to. However, rather than argue over what we want, surely it's better to ask, try and find out, and a couple of researchers are setting out to do just that. Sharon Dane, a psychologist and researcher at the University of Queensland, is asking how we want mainstream society to recognise our relationships and what different types of relationships we form, while Dr. Warwick Hosking of Victoria University is also interested in our relationships. His survey is only about gay men, looking at the role of monogamy. What are the rules and arrangements that are set up or established in relationships, and do they affect safe sex practices? We'll talk to those two later on in the show. Taken together, those surveys should shed some light on the workings of the GLBTI community and what we expect from the rest of the world. One of the collision points with the rest of the world is where gays and lesbians meet up with God, and it's been one of the more difficult relationships we've had in recent years, and it's not getting any better, especially with the Roman Catholic Church. Except in Brisbane, where Father Peter Kennedy has been welcoming same-sex couples and even the gay and lesbian choir at St Mary's, or at least he was, until his archbishop threw him out. He's waiting on the line now to talk to us. And finally, of course, Kay Sera will ponder just what community means to her as she peers beneath her bonnet. Also keeping me company in the studio tonight is Hayley Conway from the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. Hello there. You've been making a lot of yards in the press this last week or so.
Ah, thank you. A lot of effort.
A lot of effort, but it's good to get your name out there. And Andrew Shaw, member of said press, editor of MCV. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Doug.
Oh, that was a nice nice round
buzz
there. You've been working on that one, haven't you? Getting his radio voice in. St Mary's in Brisbane has been a most unusual Catholic parish. Instead of the usual priest up front, congregation down the back approach, St Mary's worships in the round. Members of the congregation take roles in the service, and gay worshippers are welcome. And what a surprise, the place is packed to the rafters. Or at any rate, it was, until Brisbane Archbishop John Battersby sacked the incumbent priest, in effect, for not being Catholic enough. And he joins us on the line now. Father Peter Kennedy, good evening.
Good day, Doug.
Well, you don't have a church anymore.
Well, we have tonight. We're still there at the moment.
They haven't actually locked the doors against you yet.
Not yet. We're there till the Sunday after Easter, in which time we'll have a liturgy whereby we will move down from the church just down the road to the TLC building, and we will be greeted at the morning mass at 9 o'clock by the Gay and Lesbian and Union Choir.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you. What's happening with the choir? But you just answered that one for me very nicely. So they're going to still be associated with you, with your worship?
Yes, they are. I think the Union Choir already practice down there, and the Gay and Lesbian Choir, they were practicing in the church in the house here the other night. But the lovely thing is that they are going to form a guard of honour for us as we come into the TLC building, our new place for liturgical practice, at least in the short term.
All right. Now, the Archbishop says that your liturgical practice has departed so far from what I call the Catholic norm that you're not really a Catholic Church anymore. How do you answer that one?
Well, I mean, it's his judgment, of course. He may be the Archbishop, but, you know, other bishops would not say that. There's a priest in Melbourne called Eric Hodgins, and it was Paul Collins, actually. Paul Collins is well known. Paul would say, just dealing with it's the peripheral things that they're concerned about. Mm. Like, the essence of our liturgy is as valid as anywhere else.
Mm.
Like, in their terms of theology. Like, I was a naval chaplain for a few years, and I was also chaplain to Boggo Road Jail here. And, like, you know, you can't go in and follow the general instruction of the Roman Missal in those situations. You have to innovate. And our community is such that we're an inner-city community, like lots of other inner-city communities, and we have people with mental illness, and we have homeless, and we have poor, and we have Indigenous peoples, and we have professional people. So you really have to, you know, be innovative about your liturgy.
Yes, and a lot of churches that aren't and stick rigidly to the rules, so to speak, are not actually doing very well in terms of congregation and that, but you have a very strong following, don't you?
Well, Doug, we have, and it makes a lot of sense to do that. Like, when it comes to, like, just the other, about 2 weeks ago, a lesbian couple who've been coming for years now, like, they were just distraught because, not that they couldn't go to their local church, but they just felt so welcome at St. Mary's. And when they had their children baptized, like, we always ask couples to stand up with their children, lesbian couples would stand up with their children and no one would bat an eyelid. And they feel very welcome in that community. They feel at home in that community.
Cool.
So the distraught stuff, like, comes from that. Yeah.
Corey Ellum, you wanted to come in on this here.
Look, Father Kennedy, I think the point that you're raising here is that your church was very inclusive, and I think the fact that your church has become public has been a shining beacon for so many people around Australia who do suffer with that struggle between religion and religion or faith with their sexuality. Just wondering if you can comment, how broad is this situation across the church? Is it just St. Mary's, or are there other congregations that actually are inclusive of gay and lesbian couples across Australia?
Corey, I think that there would be other congregations. I think the difference would be that we are quite, well, we're just so welcoming, and we don't make, like, that people don't have to feel that maybe they shouldn't give me an example. Like, I had a couple here recently, and they've been members of our community for a long time now, and one of them wanted to become a Catholic, and they're a lesbian couple, and I said, oh, don't become a Catholic. She said, but I want to become a Catholic, like, here. So I said, okay, well, we'll receive you this morning. And then I said to her partner, do you mind if I say this is your partner? And she said, I can't. I said, I don't mind, but you can't do it because I work in Catholic education.
No.
So it's that sort of difference, you know, as long as you don't come out, in a sense, particularly if you're working within the Catholic situation. If you're in an intimate relationship and you're working within the Catholic Church, then you've got a problem.
Yes, well, one of our presenters here at the radio station, in fact, he teaches in a Catholic Church school, and he's not out, obviously, at the school, but obviously well out here on the on the radio station. Well, Andrew,
Father Kennedy, but just to clarify something for me. Anyway,
Andrew,
yes, it's Andrew
Shaw, the editor of Melbourne Community Voice, one of our local gay newspapers.
Good. Where do you think the ultimate authority lies within the Catholic Church?
Well, given the way the church is structured, like, hierarchical, and that structure doesn't have to be the only structure. I mean, that wasn't how it was for the first 300 years, really. It wasn't until Constantine came on the scene and the Council of Nicaea, 325, that you began to adopt this hierarchical Roman system.
And in fact, the church kind of got co-opted by the state, didn't it?
Yes, I see where Michael Morwood, who's formerly a Catholic priest, and he writes, he's written a book called From Sand to Solid Ground, and he was saying, like, within 100 years, that the sort of governance was changing. Within 100 years, it was all changing. So, certainly within 300 years.
Mm-hmm. Father, do you think that you're a revolutionary?
You know, I'm not the sort of person to be a revolutionary. I mean, if you knew me, you'd know, you'd probably laugh. But, no, I mean, we're having over this night at 7:30, we're having the 7:30 Holy Thursday night. But what we're doing tonight is that we're having people come who launched a book called Picturing Human Rights. They launched it here on Tuesday night, and I asked them to come and launch it here again. And they will talk. Ross Daniels, who's a lecturer up here, he will speak about the book and human rights. And we won't have a Eucharist tonight, simply because we want to be in solidarity with people all around the world. But now I forgot the question you just put.
I think the question was are you a revolutionary? And you said no.
No.
Let me ask you a different question. Do you think that St. Mary's is reflective of the majority of Australians who balance religion and faith with perhaps diversity of minorities?
Well, Andrew, that's a good question, because 85% of people who put their name down as Catholics on the census form, they don't go to Mass. But I think, I call them recovering Catholics, recovering from Catholicism. But we've already discovered here in the last few months a number of people coming up and say, I've been away from Mass for 20 years, 40 years from the Catholic Church. Lots of emails, lots of letters are saying the same thing.
Yeah.
So in a sense, there are a lot of people out there who would identify with that, what St. Mary's is doing. Like, in other words, demanding, really, I suppose, that the church become more democratic.
Well, let's hope that happens, and let's hope that what you're doing is the beginning of a major change, and some other people pick up on it. We're going to have to leave it there for now, Father Peter, and of course you have your service to do.
Yeah. So thanks very much for that.
Yeah, and thank you very much for talking to us tonight.
Bye.
That was Father Peter Kennedy from St. Mary's in Brisbane. Still at St. Mary's in Brisbane, they're heading for Trades Hall.
I don't care what he says. I reckon he is a revolutionary to have that much public coverage of the fact that the church can be inclusive of gay and lesbian people.
Andrew?
You know, I mean, you know, hasn't this already been done before, and isn't it called Anglicanism?
The new Reformation, perhaps.
Well, perhaps.
Maybe he can... Is there a Melbourne Metropolitan Community Church in Brisbane?
There'd have to be.
I have no idea, actually. I don't think there is. Maybe he can start one. Well, he doesn't want to.
He doesn't want, he wants to be a, he's a Catholic.
He's a Catholic, and he wants to remain a Catholic. And that's been the heart of the argument here, that, you know, the Archbishop is saying that you can't be a Catholic and do what you're doing. You have to do it the way we want to do it.
You know? Do you think they're going to excommunicate him?
There is already talk of that. There has been talk of doing that, but there's been no decision taken, as I understand. It takes them a long while to make their mind up to do anything, basically.
Right.
Certainly to excommunicate people. Of course, it's Maundy Thursday today, which is traditionally the day when the elders of the church wash the feet of the poor. But I think we'll wait a long time before the Archbishop comes down to wash Father Peter's feet.
Although you can wash my feet afterwards, Doug, if you want.
I'm not a priest. So
I think I saw that
doesn't
movie.
Count. Okay, we'll take a brief break there. When we come back, Sharon Dane of the University of Queensland wants to know how you'd like your relationship recognised, if at all.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station.
This is the Rainbow Report.
Yes, you're on Joy 94.9 with me, Doug Pollard, and with me in the studio tonight, Hayley Conway, Andrew Shaw and Corey Earlham. Now, clearly, some members of our community want to conduct their relationships in a very traditional manner, and they want society to recognise that fact. But what about the rest of us? Sharon Dane is a social psychologist and researcher with the University of Queensland, and she's running a national survey of same-sex attracted men and women, and she joins us on the line now. Good evening, Sharon.
Good evening.
Now, tell us, what prompted you to set up this survey?
Well, it's been a long journey. It's not just something that's just happened over the last couple of months. It's over really 5 years of research, and it's just culminated in this. I think probably, if anything, it's just perfect timing.
It does seem to fit very well. Now, the information I have says you will look at disclosure. What do you mean by that?
Well, the survey actually focuses on two main areas. One of them is about people, how people disclose their sexuality, and in what manner, like at what stage of their life and in what manner. Now, this can be very different for people who are in same-sex relationships who have a partner versus people who are currently single. I mean, if you have a partner, you can say, you know, this is my partner so-and-so, and that's it. You've disclosed. So it can be quite a different approach for people who are not in that situation. So we're looking at that part of it as well.
Right.
But probably the main focus of the study really is on relationship recognition. And that's for people who are single or in casual relationships or in ongoing committed relationships. We're really interested in their personal preferences as well as what they would like to see or Australia, how they would like to see Australia recognise relationships for same-sex couples in general.
Okay, so it's kind of two things here. One is kind of like how they see their own relationships and how they want other people to see them.
That's correct.
And then there's, you know, what kind of legal recognition they would like to see for those relationships. So, yeah, obviously marriage looms large in this argument and always does.
Yes.
Is that going to be covered as part of one of the possible relationship types you're going to ask people about?
It definitely is. We have, it ranges from no recognition at all to de facto recognition to relationships recognized through a registry, which cover, you know, your domestic partnerships, your civil unions, and mm-hmm. then it goes on to marriage as well as overseas marriage, overseas civil partnerships. So there's a whole range, as well as another box. So people who, you know, can also put in something if they want to describe themselves, how they want their relationships recognized.
Okay.
If they don't fit any of those labels, they can do so as well.
Okay. Andrew Shaw, editor of MCV, you want to come in here?
Yes, hi Sharon. I'm just wondering, is it like we have to choose across a scale, or can we have like de facto relationships, civil unions, as well as marriage, you know?
Definitely. So on the survey, you can tick all of those that that apply. So for your own preferences, we actually choose which would you like for yourself. But when it comes to relationships that you would like to see recognised in Australia in general for same-sex couples, then you can tick as many boxes as you want.
Okay, so what's the purpose of this study? I mean, what's the information going to be used for?
Well, on many levels, I'm hoping. One is for the benefit of the gay community in the sense that they can use this data then to be able to see where we stand, because it's, I don't know how many times I've heard from people saying that people in the gay community don't know what they want, that we're all over the place. So this is a chance for people in large numbers to have their say, for one.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, is it likely that this survey is going to come up with anything else other than what it has in the past, which is the community supports choice, but nobody has a unified position on what they individually would want to do? That's to say exactly what Andrew was getting at before. We want the three tiers of relationship recognition, but somebody often will want one of those in particular, whether it be de facto or marriage or partnerships. Do you think this survey is going to inform us any further than that?
Well, I believe so, because it goes beyond that for people to actually be able to say what they personally would like, as well as people who aren't in relationships. I know there have been surveys done that really focus mainly on people in relationships. I'm trying to get as broad a sample as possible. So you've got people who have maybe even hadn't even come out yet. You know, even though they haven't been in those situations, they may still have their preferences about how they would like to see it, how they would like their relationships to be acknowledged with their friends, or how they would like a relationship to be acknowledged should they get into a relationship further down the track. So I'm hoping we'll get that data as well come across clearly. Also, we're asking people, which is completely unique in the survey, is how do they perceive the Australian public views their relationships compared to opposite-sex relationships?
That's a new one, definitely. Hayley, do you see a use for this kind of information? Could, as the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby kind of thing, would kind of this kind of statistical information, get my tongue in gear tonight, be useful in your campaigning?
Certainly, I think these kinds of statistics and also that kind of anecdotal evidence is really useful in terms of presenting both arguments but also stories to the people who do make decisions, and that's a really important way to create change, is by presenting real-life evidence of how these things are affecting people's lives and what they do want. So, yeah, it is absolutely useful, but I think that it can be that what is being confused right now is everyone saying, well, you know, what does the community want and how do we fight for that if we don't know what everyone wants or if everyone wants something different, whereas the reality is that not allowing anyone who wants to get married to get married is a human rights issue. That's it.
Yeah, and as I said in my introduction earlier on, you know, no one says that, you know, no one points out that the straight community is just as divided over what kind of relationship recognition they want for themselves.
I say we should just stop paying tax.
But then,
yes,
then nobody would be paying
Sharon. The feudal system, yeah. Excellent.
Yeah,
yes.
Then nobody would be paying Sharon's salary at the end of the day, and then we would be.
By the way, I do this for love.
Don't we all,
Sharon? How many people do you actually need to get a kind of a comprehensive or viable result?
Well, I'm being optimistic, and I'm hoping we're going to get in the thousands. I mean. It's been running now for 5 days live, and we have 400 people already, and that's quite equally across the board in states and territories, which is great. And this is before I've advertised, so I'm hoping that we can get those large numbers. I mean, as many as possible. And we're running the survey for at least 4 months to try and ensure that we do that.
Now, some people I know have been freaked out because there's a German affix to your website.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I'd like to clarify that. The software, it comes from Unipark, which is a German company. It's based in Germany. But this particular software is used by universities around the world, and people can go and check, you know, you can go into www.unipark.de, and you can actually see the universities that use it, and the University of New South Wales and the University of Melbourne also use this survey. So that's why there's a DE in the URL, and I'm not allowed to, or I can't modify that.
No, it's just that a few people got a bit paranoid about, you know, is this really bona fide University of Queensland research?
Couldn't the university have paid for a bloody $15 American website so you had notsoprivatelies.com? Come on, people, make it easy for us.
No, they don't, but I'm glad you said that. So maybe if someone's listening from the University of Queensland, they'll take heed.
Okay.
Feel free to quote me, Sharon.
Good luck
yes,
with that.
Feel free to say that Joy is definitely behind you on that one. Okay, the survey is at www3, that's the figure 3, dot Unipark, UNIPARK.DE, /UC/, all one word, not so private lives.
That's right. To make it a little bit easier for people because of that long-winded URL with people, unless they're standing there with a pen and paper in their hand, I'm not going to remember.
Of course.
They can go to, just Google, PFLAG Brisbane. This is being financially supported to some extent by PFLAG.
Right. Much easier.
Yeah. So go to the Google site. Just Google PFLAG Brisbane. Now, it's only the Brisbane PFLAG. And there's a big yellow link right on their front page that will take you to the survey.
That's great. And, of course, they could always telephone the station here, and we'll leave the web address with the guys on reception.
The other thing is, too, is if people have a Facebook profile, they can go into Facebook. Now, there is a group there. You can actually access the survey by doing a search. So if you go into Facebook and put in Not So Private Lives, you'll be able to access the survey that way as well.
Okay. Well, best of luck with it, Sharon. We look forward to seeing the results
in
a few months' time.
Can I just say one thing, that people out there realize this is for 18-year-olds and over, and it's for Australian citizens or permanent residents only. They can be living overseas, but it's Australian citizens or permanent residents only.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sharon, and thanks
You're
for your time
welcome.
Tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. That's Sharon Dane, social psychologist and researcher at the University of Queensland, and running a national survey of same-sex-attracted men and women. And, say, PFLAG Brisbane is your link through to that. You're listening to the Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9. In a moment, we'll talk about another attempt to shed light on our community, this time specifically about gay men and how we conduct our relationships.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
SMS on 0427JOY949.
And in fact, someone has done so. Talking about our previous item with Father Peter Kennedy, I suggest bringing on the excommunication as fast as possible. The Roman Catholic Church is poisonous from the top down. The Pope believes condoms harm the fight against HIV in Africa. What a belief system. Disillusioned? Move on. Regards from Cam. Well, thank you for that one, Cam. Now, are you monogamous? That is, totally faithful to your partner? Or do you just pretend? Should we even try to be monogamous, or is that just for straights, when there's so many men and so little time, as the song says? Now, we have another survey to look at here from Dr. Warwick Hosking of the School of Social Sciences and Psychology at Victoria University. His survey is called One Partner or More. And Dr. Warwick joins us now. I'll just call you Warwick, it's easier, isn't it? Joins us now in the studio. Warwick, don't most gay men, even those in supposedly monogamous relationships, play around on the side as well anyway? I mean, don't we know that?
Well, we might anecdotally know that, but this is something that I'm trying to find out in a kind of more empirically valid way. So yes, it probably is true that a lot of people do play around, but I want to know more about it.
And why do you want to know this? What is this for?
I think there are a number of reasons why this kind of research should be done. I think if we take opposite sex relationships for a moment, there's a usually quite a strict norm about monogamy, and that's a kind of expected model on which those sorts of relationships will be based.
Yeah.
But in the GLBTI community, it's not quite so clear-cut. And in the very first instance, for a knowledge base, I think it's interesting to know how people construct their own views of what their relationship is going to be and the kind of variety that is going to satisfy individuals in their relationships.
Now, you mentioned particularly you're interested in how these relationship arrangements impact on safe sex practices. Is that one of the drivers behind your research here?
It's one of the several drivers. One of the things that I was interested in is finding out, first of all, what the rules of people's relationships are, and then the extent to which people stick to these rules and whether rule breaking is communicated between partners. And if you imagine that one of the rules of a relationship might be that you engage only in safe sex with other people, and that rule is broken but not communicated to the other partner, then that has obvious implications.
Yes, or if indeed you're supposed to be having a monogamous relationship and you're not being monogamous,
yes,
but
indeed.
You don't tell your partner. I mean, these are all very, very fraught areas. So what's the practical application for all this?
Practical application, I think, is knowledge that can be transmitted into education and into counselling practices and social work. There might be a couple that goes along to seek therapy from a counsellor or a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
and if the psychologist is trained and has a greater knowledge of how gay men's relationships work and the whole gamut of different expectations and rules that they have, then that gives them the tools to help the couple sort through their problems.
It could also be useful in, I suppose, designing anti-HIV programs of one kind or another, could it not?
Yes, I think so. There's a clear population health and public health implication as well.
Yeah, because we are in a time of, once again, rising infections. So anything that gives us any further information about what people actually get up to.
Absolutely.
Is going to help. Hayley?
I was actually been thinking about this fairly recently as well, and I think that one of the, another impact of this kind of study, and particularly if it is broadened beyond gay men, which I'm not suggesting you do right now, is that it is important to recognise that people are having relationships outside of this accepted televised norm,
yes.
And that we do need to be aware of that, whether you're a health provider or a service provider of some kind, or just looking to have your relationship recognised outside of your immediate family or community.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. And I think it's also important for people to recognise that monogamy is not necessarily the be-all and end-all of a successful relationship, that men and women can have a very satisfying quality relationship as long as they stick to the rules that have been decided upon. I think that's the main thing.
But isn't there a danger with this kind of thing, that you are going to reinforce the stereotype that I referred to at the beginning, that, you know, gay men are incapable of being faithful and monogamous? I mean,
there is that danger, but I think what I'm hoping to show is that it's really not the fact that monogamy is the issue. It's really how much people stick to what they've agreed upon in their relationships.
And I
think that's more the issue.
Yes, and I guess one should also point out that although monogamy is somehow talked about as being like the standard heterosexual expectation, it's more honoured in the breach than the observance, even among married couples, I think.
Yes.
As anyone who's ever been on a weekend business seminar without their partner should know. I've been on quite a few of them.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that nominally straight people don't cross the line when they're in those sort of situations. So
of course.
I suppose, in a way, it's a benefit because, if we are being more honest in the way that we talk about our relationships, I personally feel that that gives you a stronger relationship at the end of the day. Because there's nothing worse than having one set of expectations and then having them suddenly destroyed when you find out your partner's not been sticking to the rules.
Yeah, that's right. And also when you realise that your assumptions of what the expectations are and maybe not shared by the partner, and that's one of the things I'm looking at in this survey as well, how much are these rules actually explicitly talked about and how much are they assumed?
Yeah, I saw a piece on the net this week. It was talking about the rise in HIV stats, and one of the issues that was brought up was that, not talking in terms of relationships, but just talking in terms of casual sex, in that we don't seem to be terribly good at negotiating about sex. We don't seem to be very good at talking in bed about, what our expectations are, what we want to do, what the safety level is, all these sort of things. There's still a kind of level of embarrassment with some people, and there's also it's somehow not macho to negotiate. Do you reckon you're going to uncover any of that sort of thing in there?
I'm not sure if I'll uncover that particular issue. The only thing that I can think that would address that is finding out that men aren't talking about these rules, that they're just kind of assuming that there's an agreement but not actually talking about it. And I think to address this issue of non-communication is, again, just to make education and knowledge more widely accessible.
Okay, well, let's get on to the nitty-gritty. Where do people go to find your survey?
This survey, at the moment, there is a banner at the samesame.com.au website that people can click on that will take them directly to the survey. Otherwise, they can go to a link on the VU website, Victoria University website. Mm-hmm. If they go to www.vu.edu.au/research/gay-relationships. And if you scroll down a little bit on that page, you'll find the link.
But can they get to it from the front page of the VU?
No, they have to go to the research page first.
Okay, they have to go to the research.
But you can follow those links from the front page of VU.
Yeah, probably best to find it via same, I would have thought.
Yeah, that will be the easiest, fewer clicks required option.
Okay, Dr. Warwick Hosking, thank you very much for your time this evening.
It's a pleasure.
We've also got a few SMSs coming here. Brett has asked, can we kindly let him know what the URL was for the earlier survey we mentioned? That's the one for the University of Queensland. I would reiterate there, the best place to find a link through to that is on the PFLAG Brisbane website, and you can find that simply by Googling PFLAG Brisbane.
PFLAGBrisbane.com.au.
Yeah, pretty easy. Pretty easy. Thank you, Corey. Do we really need all this, do you think?
No, I don't think we do.
I can see you kind of steaming quietly there for both of those.
I just don't understand why we have to rake over it and rake over it. I really don't.
The thing that we didn't really get to explore with Sharon was the interesting question around how lesbian and gay men feel that Australia accepts their relationship compared to how they accept heterosexual relationships. That's a new statistic that will be interesting to be able to use. Mm. The thing that I found interesting was linking these two together. I was reading a lot of conservative arguments about why we should have gay marriage, and these two things sort of go hand in hand, and that is that if we have gay marriage, it will move our community in some way towards being more mainstream and therefore less promiscuous, and we'll have more monogamy and all the rest of it. So the interesting thing is, if we got gay marriage next year, let's do it in 10 years' time again and see whether there's any changes.
Right. Hayley, you're the one with steam coming out of your ears now.
It's just based on this really outrageous idea that somehow being allowed to get married automatically makes you more monogamous or more heteronormative or something like that. And it's just ridiculous. As long as people are engaging in relationships in a consenting fashion, everyone's honest about what they're doing, needing, taking, leaving, and agree to it, that's fine.
Yes, but I mean, everybody knows that two things happen when you get married. You get less sex and you put weight on.
Thanks for reminding me, Doug.
I mean, it's happened to you, Corey. It happened to me. Are you married, Andrew?
Don't look at me.
Andrew's
single looking at this.
Sparrow-like.
Should point out, that was conservative arguments over in the US.
Yes. Yes, they were. Minor correction here from PFLAG Brisbane. It's PFLAGBrisbane.org. pflagbrisbane.org.au.
Thanks, Corey.
Not .com.au. That's pflagbrisbane.org.au.
And I like that people are checking us up while we're on the air.
That was fast.
Good. Warwick was my tutor in my first year psych at Melbourne Uni a few years ago. Well, isn't that nice?
He's so young.
Again,
how old is he? 15?
Creepy stalkers.
Oh, he's definitely not married. He's far too slim.
Excuse me. Where's the door?
And pretty.
It's bordering on sexual harassment, guys.
Yes, this indeed.
Flagging
indeed.
That.
This is out of control.
Yeah, I have the mic. I have the mic here. Okay. Another one here from Bobby. Bobby O. Hello. We have relationship recognition in this country under federal law. It's called de facto, which basically gives us the same rights as straight marriage bar the certificate. We need to realise that people in the UK and the US don't have that, and they need to get married or have a civil partnership to grant them property rights, etc., etc. We just whinge. Go and live in Eastern Europe, Middle East or Africa and see what it's like to be gay there.
Hayley, what do you think about that comment?
I think that equality is still equality regardless of where you're living, and so is discrimination. And just because it's worse somewhere else doesn't mean you shouldn't meet the same standards here. But thanks for your comments.
Thank you for shopping at Joy Melbourne. Yeah. Well, what do you think? What do you think of the state of our community generally? What do you think of our state of our relationships? Is this whole community thing just a myth, perhaps? When we come back, Corey Earlham will report to us on the state of play as the Labour Party crafts its manifesto for the next election. And, of course, the inimitable Kay Sarah will be peering beneath her bonnet to look at the state of our community from her rather elevated, it's the heels, darling, point of view. We'll be right back.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website, joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Informing, entertaining and provoking, this is The Rainbow Report.
Yes, and it's being brought to you on Joy 94.9 by me, Doug Pollard. And now it's time for a bit of a political roundup with our good friend Corey Earlham. And, well, we'll start with the ALP consultation draft national platform, whatever that may be, and maybe get time to talk about a couple of other things as well. So, Corey, first off, what is this thing?
Okay, so the ALP has this 150-page document that basically has a whole bunch of one or two sentence statements, and that makes up their national platform. So we support introducing sexual orientation and gender identity.
So it's what they'll fight the next election on.
Uranium, overseas, paid parenting leave, all these sort of...
Overseas
issues.
They're being overseas.
Overseas issues, anything. Anything is in there. Yeah. It's a broad thing. It's not just national issues. It's overseas as well. It's domestic. It's state. It's anything they say.
Now, you're calling this a consultation draft. They're calling it a consultation. I stand corrected. Presumably, this means they want to hear from people in response to what they've put in here. So how does that affect us?
Let's walk through the process. We have a consultation draft out now, which will be available for people to talk about up until the 5th of June. They can either go through to a public forum if they're a member of an ALP, or if they're a member of an ALP, they can fill in a form or send a letter off to the National Policy Committee. That will then get redrafted into what's called the Draft National Platform.
Okay.
Drop the word consultation. And that gets put to the ALP National Conference. They all fight about it over 3 or 4 days, and then that becomes the platform, and we've lost our opportunity to change things between now.
Okay, so it's a bit like green paper, white paper, bill kind of process. Yeah.
No, because you can't change it after it happens at conference in July. Once that's the policy, that's the policy. You can't do Senate inquiries at the last minute. This is our opportunity for the next 5 years to influence national policy from the ALP.
So, first off, then, is this is for ALP members.
Yes.
Okay. And you say they need to stand up and speak about our issues. So what's not there? What do they need to stand up and speak about?
Oh, look, there's a whole raft of things they could speak about. There's nothing about homophobia in schools if they wanted to talk about that. But two key points they should talk about is there's nothing about an inclusive statement about marriage. In fact, they actually go so far as to keep that offensive statement around marriages between a man and a woman. They talk about they support sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination laws, but they've supported that for the last 5 years. It's time for them to actually strengthen that wording into saying they will introduce federal anti-discrimination laws.
Right.
And they talk about civil unions, and that's great, because they talk about them not being a marriage-like civil union. That's great. We don't want a marriage-like civil union. We want non-marriage-like civil unions, and we want marriage.
You say the civil union clause is not as strong as it should be or could be. What do you mean by that?
There's a couple of things around it. One, I'd like us to start exploring having a national civil union scheme rather than just the state-based ones we have now. I'm not saying get rid of the state ones. I'm just saying there are some states that won't introduce a scheme. So let's look at our opportunities at a federal level to create a national one. There's a whole bunch of technical issues around the fact that it's a responsibility of the states. We can work through those things. Let's just start with agreeing we should do it.
Okay, so the basis of all this is, A, become a member of the Labour Party if you're not already.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying if you're a member of the Labour Party, you can get involved and have your say.
Well, given that we're likely to have a Labour government for at least one more term, I would have thought.
If not two.
You know, hello, Prime Minister Gillard. Hopefully, anyway. because Mr. Turnbull ain't going anywhere in particular.
You just said Mr. Costello.
No, we don't talk about him, and nor does anybody else these days. So, you know, it would make sense to join up the Labour Party, and then you could have an influence on what the government is going to do next. Okay. We'll come back to this, if we can, a little later in the programme, but really, I think it's about time we welcomed back Kay Sarah into the studio. Now, Kay is an integral part of this supposed community of ours, whether on stage or in the press or giving her time for community fundraisers, and most recently giving us a most entertaining look at our own history. So tonight she's lifting the community bonnet and finding all is not as well as it might be underneath.
Thank you, Doug. What a lead up. Well, don't ask for any jokes. I don't care if it's Easter, I'm not in the mood. It all goes back to a sad, soggy Sunday afternoon. No, not Easter. My sullen mood. Grey skies, patches of rain, wind, very Melbourne of old. The Victorian AIDS Council has set up a modest marquee in Faulkner Park. You see, it's their 25th anniversary and a public gesture is called for. There's a yummy chocolate cake, champagne and, light entertainment on offer. Apparently that's me. Light entertainment. I take to the tiny stage after the official speeches and launch into song. It's my parody of I Will Survive. It's about... well, that's the subject for another bonnet. The rain threatens. The crowd cower. Under a stubbly pine tree, I fight to be heard. Finally, as if on cue, the radio mic cuts out, ending my act. It all seems terribly tragic, yet somehow appropriate. Shut up in the peanut gallery. Summing up the sentiment of the day, even. The true believers camping out under a lonely tree in an even lonelier park with a picnic hamper, champagne and a touch of drag. Hardly a Mardi Gras parade. The 25th year history of HIV/AIDS in Melbourne is one of triumph as well as sadness. Triumph in forging a community that rose to the challenge of protecting itself in the face of a deadly disease and shocking resurgence of discrimination. Sadness at the lives lost in the battle. And to cap it all off, a 25th anniversary that is left wanting. Is this all it has come down to? A modest, soggy Sunday afternoon in Faulkner Park? At its height, the HIV/AIDS movement was a community force to be reckoned with. Hundreds of volunteers and many hundreds more who turned out in support of various fundraisers. At the Lead in the 80s and the 90s, the Lead is a hotel here, of course you know that, there were crowds of bearded moustached gents who flocked to the annual Lead auctions. Once I witnessed a room full of fellows who stood with their mouths open in disbelief as Judith Durham took to the stage to sing a swag of her 60s hits. Hey there, Georgie girl, brought the house down and the crowd sang along. The carnival is over, seemed to hit a raw nerve and we cried. The song gave voice to the feelings of a community in deep, deep AIDS mourning. Sadly, such shared experiences were not in evidence at the 25th anniversary of the VAC. Feeding my melancholic mood, but a few days later, another small group gathered to celebrate the contributions of Colin Billing, who sadly passed away recently. Colin was an integral part of our community, setting up Miners 18, a social support group for young people. He was also one of the great volunteers of the Orso Foundation, particularly around the heyday of the warehouse parties. In latter years, he became a staunch supporter of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival and the Australian Gay and Lesbian Archives. I knew Colin as a mild-mannered gent. always up for a chin wag on the ups and downs of the community. It seemed I wasn't the only person to pay notice to Colin. You see, he was a doer in the community. He was probably better informed than most of us. Now, I'm using the word community here with intention. I almost lost my place. Look out. For the sake of argument, let's put that silly little word community in inverted commas. It seems to me it's a word more easily said than done these days. For without the activists of the HIV/AIDS era and the staunch volunteers of the mould of Colin Billing, what kind of community will we have in the future? Online via Facebook and the ubiquitous chat rooms? At the clubs and pubs and occasional boutique dance parties? Through the promptings of queer media, such as Joy and our weekly magazines? Annually at festivals like Midsummer and Melbourne Queer Film? Or at a combination of all of the above? Now, there's a challenge for you. My concern is that the relative freedom of today will lead to a gradual disintegration of our community, and wouldn't that be a great shame? Like I said, I'm not in the mood for jokes. I'm Kay Sarah. Light entertainment, apparently.
Well, that wasn't... you're quite right. You weren't in the mood for jokes tonight, were you?
Don't talk. Yeah. But I'm happy again now.
Oh, good. Well, a bit of a grey day there. We've just got an SMS in here. This one's for you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Who is that half-wit questioning the need for understanding through research? Kick him off the air and leave the discussions to the educated people.
I've asked Mother not to comment when I'm on air, but she doesn't do it.
You've definitely made yourself a fan there.
I recognise that number. You're in trouble.
Yes, he's writing it down now.
That's right.
Stand by for a lot of spam on your mobile phone. Corey, we were talking about the ALP there. There's a few other things going on that we ought to sort of touch on before we go tonight, I think. One is the human rights consultation that's coming to town. That'll be here when?
This Tuesday.
Hello,
this
Corey.
Tuesday. I'm Corey.
Changed.
That's right.
Hello, Hayley.
Yes, hello. One redhead, another, whatever. We're breeding ourselves out of existence. It's true.
Well, you're kind of a wee bit smarter, I think, in terms of appearance, anyway.
Thank you.
Snazzy shirt.
Definitely butcher.
Yes, this is true.
Definitely true. So it's Tuesday in Melbourne.
Yes.
And Wednesday in Geelong.
That's now, right.
Can people just turn up, or do they have to kind of register first, or
you
what?
You do need to register first, and you can do that online. At the Human Rights Commission's website, which is www.hreoc.gov.au.
Right.
And people can register for time slots online.
Okay, now, why is it important to talk to this human rights consultation? Is this about getting the Bill of Rights thing up and running?
This is about talking whether we want a Bill of Rights or not, let alone whether we're going to have one, what would be in it, how would we want it enforced if we did have one. If you've got an opinion, you should be there.
And look, the simple, easy thing is ACE will have on its website in the next couple of days a sample submission. The VEEJ is going to run a forum in the coming weeks.
Yes, with the Also Foundation.
Yep.
The VEEJ.
The VEEJ, Victorian Gallows Bin Rights Lobby. Human Rights Law Resource Centre is soon to release their publication in addition to the Human Rights Commission's one. There's lots of information out there that people can make an easy submission. It won't take you very long if you don't have the time to go down and actually speak about it at one of the forums.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Two very other quick things.
Yeah.
Home and Away's got another lesbian kiss.
Woohoo!
Coming up soon.
Great.
I had the pleasure of attending a public lecture by Nancy Polakoff, who is basically saying we should stop talking about marriage, we should start talking about recognising all forms of relationships, and maybe that's something we can talk about next time.
We could indeed, because we can't talk about it now, because we've run out of time. Anyway, my guests tonight were Father Peter Kennedy, late of St Mary's Catholic Church, Brisbane, the delectable Miss Kay Sarah, Andrew Shaw from MCV, Hayley Conway of the VGLRL, Sharon Dane, the University of Queensland, Dr. Warwick Hosking of Victoria University, and the redoubtable Corey Earlham, now he knows what that word means, from the Australian Coalition for Equality.
Why don't I get an adjective? My adjective?
Snappy dresser, Hayley Conway from the Victorian Gallows Bin Rights Lobby.
You look like one of the shadows. Where's Cliff Richards?
Ginge.
My mother will be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm sure she will. Big thanks also to you. Thanks for spending time with us, for your SMSs and your messages. The show is produced by Bianca Johnston. Our technical production is by Michael Bayliss. Don't forget, the blog's online at rainbowreporter.com. Ooh, applause there. We will be running another whole of the Rainbow Report programme with Hank Yongan, the General Manager of Centrelink, on April 26th to get a feedback on how this thing is progressing. There's already a lot of criticism around the fact that he's only running radio ads and magazine ads in the gay press and not writing to everybody who might be affected by it. So that and various other issues we will raise with him on April 26th. Do get in touch with us at Joy if you have questions you'd like to ask him. I'm Doug Pollard. I'll see you again next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.